What that meant, therefore, is that already by the end of the 15th century, artillery had begun to transform siege warfare. A medieval castle, if you think about it, is basically designed to counter an assault by people trying to climb over the walls with ladders or siege towers or something like that. For those reasons, medieval castle walls are made very high, they're made very thin, and they have all kinds of projections from which people can drop nasty objects, boiling oil and cow manure, heavy stones and things like this on the besiegers. But the high, thin walls of the medieval castle was really vulnerable, or they were really vulnerable, to being pounded away at by the new kinds of artillery, and all those elegant little projections would often fracture and splinter dangerously and go flying all over the place. So that by the end of the 15th century, it became clear that the old-style medieval castle was in trouble. There's actually an interesting example of this from the French invasion of Italy in 1494. There's a castle of Monte San Giovanni, which previously had withstood a traditional siege lasting 7 years long. It only took the French with their new cannons 8 hours to knock it down into pieces. Now, the threat of these new cannons prompted two important changes in fortress design, and this led to a new style of military architecture, which originated in Italy, because that's where the French had gone to fight the Spanish. And since it originated in Italy, the new style of military architecture is usually called the Trace Italienne, or in French, the Italian outline. The elements were, first of all, a redesign of the way the fortress itself was laid out. And the crucial change was the introduction of something called the bastion, which was a very large platform, shaped really like an arrow. It was open to the sky, and it served as a gun platform. You put all your artillery in there. And the idea was that you put these bastions all around the fortress in such a way that they could all reinforce each other. There was no dead ground. Every part of the land in front of the fortress could be swept by crossfire from the defenders' guns. Second of all, the fortress walls themselves underwent a kind of redesign. Rather than being made of stone, they were now made of earth and rubble, which is a little bit more resilient and less brittle. It's more resilient to cannonballs. The walls themselves might be faced with brick, which is less brittle than stone, or even in the Netherlands in particular, faced with turf, which is still a little bit more elastic. Not only were the walls made differently out of different materials, but they were made a lot lower now, and they were made thicker, and they were sloped backward to present a kind of glancing surface to artillery shot. The effect of all these changes in fortress walls was to make them, needless to say, an awful lot more resistant to artillery fire. And then, having made these low, thick walls, the defense was usually complemented by digging a wide and deep ditch around the fortress itself, which would prevent the infantry from jumping over the low walls in a surprise attack. In a sense, what ends up happening is that the medieval castle's advantage as a physical barrier to being climbed over is retained by sinking a lot of it underground. You make it low, but then you dig the trench in front of it. Now, the superiority of this new fortress design of the Trace Italienne was very quickly recognized. It was so much better than anything that had existed before, at least in terms of dealing with artillery. And therefore, this design spread all over Europe, from the 1530s in particular, but especially during the second half of the 16th century. It should be said that the cost of building this kind of fortress, designing it, getting together the labor for it, was really enormous. It's important to keep in mind that if you're building the fortress, you can spread the costs of putting it together, of constructing your defense, over many years. Whereas if you're going to attack the fortress, you've got to get all your resources together at one single point in time. So there's a fiscal sense in which it's easier for the defender rather than for the attacker. Even if you did get all your forces together, these fortresses were extremely difficult to capture. Certainly, if you only had infantry alone, it was virtually impossible. And even if you were backed up by heavy siege artillery, a siege of one of these new Trace Italienne fortresses was extremely time-consuming and was certain to bring very heavy casualties. There was a classic method to take these fortresses. You would typically surround the fortress with a double line of trenches, a double line of trenches to make sure the inside line to keep the defenders in and the outside line to keep any relievers out. And then slowly and painfully, the attackers would dig a series of zigzagging trenches toward the fortress walls. Once you got close enough to bring the fortress walls within close artillery range, you would open fire on them with mass artillery, or perhaps you might try to kind of dig into the walls and bring them down. And the hope of the besieger, at least, was that the rubble would collapse into the moat and create a kind of bridge over which your infantry could storm into the fortress. Now, all of these operations, needless to say, had to be conducted under a hail of crossfire from the fortress. And if you didn't move quickly, if you didn't rush into that hole quickly, if you were able to open a breach in the fortress, there was always the danger that the defender might plug it or build a second inner wall. So that Under these conditions, it's really not hard to see why an awful lot of generals felt that it made a lot more sense, rather than trying to storm a fortress, to simply surround it and starve it into submission.